Hello there. So, today's my birthday. Well, the day of posting is I am recording this in advance because I have a feeling this will require a fair bit of editing. I wanted to do something special for my birthday, and I did originally intend to record a Nazi for Work audio, but unfortunately— Hi, kitty! Sorry, my cat has decided to join us for this recording. Unfortunately, my roommates have conspired against me, and they both decided to simultaneously take some time off. So that leaves me with very little privacy, unfortunately. So I'm doing what I can, and I have decided that to at least give you guys something a little special, I'm going to be reading Pride and Prejudice. It was that or Dracula, but Dracula is like 500-something pages, I think, last time I checked. Or at least my copy is, and I do not have the willpower for that. Pride and Prejudice is 200-something I think I can manage. Also, my sincerest apologies to any and all British people who will be listening, because there will be butchering of your lovely accent. Because, you know, Jane Austen is English, and I thought if I read the dialogue in a sort of approximation of an English accent that it would be a little more immersive? I don't know. Hi, kitty. I am going to be reading a few chapters at a time. I'm going to be starting with the first three, and I will also post a version of this without me yammering for what is almost 2 minutes at this point. But yeah, thank you for being here, thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy me delving into Pride and Prejudice. Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. Chapter 1. It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. However little known the feelings or views of such a man may be on his first entering a neighborhood, this truth is so well fixed in the minds of the surrounding families that he is considered as the rightful property of some one or the other of their daughters. "Dear Mr. Bennet," said his lady to him one day, "have you heard that Netherfield Park is let at last?" Mr. Bennet replied that he had not. "But it is," returned she, "for Mrs. Long has just been here, and she told me all about it." Mr. Bennet made no answer. "Don't you want to know who has taken it?" cried his wife impatiently. "You want to tell me, and I have no objection to hearing it." This was invitation enough. "Why, my dear, you must know. Mrs. Long said that Netherfield Park is taken by a young man of large fortune from the north of England, that he came down on Monday in a chaise and four to see the place, and was so much delighted with it that he agreed with Mr. Morris immediately that he is to take possession before Michaelmas, and some of his servants are to be in the house by the end of the week."
"What is his name?"
"Thingley."
"Is he married or single?"
"Oh, single, my dear, to be sure. A single man of large fortune. 4,000 or 5,000 a year. What a fine thing for our girls."
"How so? How can it affect them?"
"My dear Mr. Bennet," replied his wife, "how can you be so tiresome? You must know that I am thinking of his marrying one of them."
"Is that his design in settling here?"
Nonsense! How can you talk so? But it is very likely that he may fall in love with one of them, and therefore you must visit him as soon as he comes."
"I see no occasion for that."
"You and the girls may go, or you may send them by themselves, which perhaps will be still better, for you are as handsome as any of them. Mr. Bingley might like you the best of the party." "My dear, you flatter me. I certainly have had my share of beauty. But I do not pretend to be anything extraordinary now. When a woman has 5 grown-up daughters, she ought to give over thinking of her own beauty."
"In such cases, a woman has not often much beauty to think of."
"But, my dear, you must indeed go and see Mr. Bingley when he comes into the neighbourhood."
"It is more than I engage for, I assure you."
"But consider your daughters. Only think of what an establishment it would be for one of them. Sir William and Lady Lucas are determined to go, merely on that account. For in general you know that they visit no newcomers. Indeed you must go, for it will be impossible for us to visit him if you do not."
"You are over-scrupulous, surely. I dare say Mr. Bingley will be very glad to see you, and I will send a few lines by you to assure him of my hearty consent to marrying whichever he chooses of the girls, though I must throw in a good word for my little Lizzie. I desire you will do no such thing. Lizzie's not a bit better than the others, and I am sure she's not half as handsome as Jane, nor half as good-humoured as Lydia. But you are always giving her the preference.
They have none of them much to recommend them, replied he. They are all silly and ignorant, like other girls, but Lizzie has something more of quickness than her sisters.
Mr. Bennet, how can you abuse your own children in such a way? You take delight in vexing me. You have no compassion for my poor nerves.
You mistake me, my dear. I have high respect for your nerves. They are my only friends. I have heard you mention them with consideration these 20 years at least.
Ah, but you do not know what I suffer.
But I hope you will get over it, and live to see many young men of 4,000 a year come into the neighbourhood.
It will be no use of us if 20 such should come, since you will not visit them.
Depend upon it, my dear, that when there are 20, I will visit them all. Mr. Bennet was so odd a mixture of quick parts, sarcastic humour, reserve, and caprice, that his experience of 23 years had been insufficient to make his wife understand his character. Her mind was less difficult to develop. She was a woman of mean understanding, little information, and uncertain temper. When she was discontented, she fancied herself nervous. The business of her life was to get her daughters married. Its solace was visiting and news. Chapter 2. Mr. Bennet was among the earliest of those who waited on Mr. Bingley. He had always intended to visit him, though to the last always assuring his wife that he would not go. Until the evening after the visit was paid, she had no knowledge of it. It was then disclosed in the following manner. Observing his second daughter employed in the trimming a hat, he suddenly addressed her with, "I hope Mr. Bingley will like it, Lizzie."
"We are not in a way to know what Mr. Bingley likes," said her mother resentfully, "since you are not to visit."
"But you forget, Mamma," said Elizabeth, "that we shall meet him at the assemblies, and that Mrs. Long has promised to introduce him."
"I do not believe Mrs. Long will do any such thing. She has 2 nieces of her own. She is a selfish, hypocritical woman, and I have no opinion of her."
"No more have I," said Mr. Bennet, "and I am glad to find that you do not depend on her serving you." Mrs. Bennet deigned not to make any reply, but unable to contain herself, began scolding one of her daughters.
"Don't keep coughing so, Kitty, for heaven's sake. Have a little compassion on my nerves. You tear them to pieces."
"Kitty has no discretion in her coughs," said her father. "She times them ill."
"I do not cough for my own amusement," replied Kitty fretfully.
"When is your next ball to be, Lizzie?"
"Tomorrow fortnight."
"Ay, so it is," cried her mother,
"and Mrs. Long does not come back till the day before, so it will be impossible for her to introduce him, for she will not know him herself."
"Then, my dear, you may have the advantage of your friend, and introduce Mr. Bingley to her."
"Impossible, Mr. Bennet, impossible, when I am not acquainted with him myself. How can you be so teasing?"
"I honour your circumspection. A fortnight's acquaintance is certainly very little. One cannot know what a man really is by the end of a fortnight, but if we do not venture, somebody else will. And after all, Mrs. Long and her nieces must stand their chance, and therefore she will think of it as an act of kindness. If you decline the office, I will take it on myself." The girls stared at their father. Mrs. Bennet said only,
"Nonsense, nonsense!"
"What can be the meaning of that emphatic exclamation?" said he. "What can be the meaning of that emphatic exclamation?" cried he. "Do you not consider the forms of introduction and the stress that is laid on them as nonsense? I cannot quite agree with you there. What say you, Mary? For you are a young lady of deep reflection, I know, and read great books and made extracts." Mary wished to say something very sensible, but knew not how. "While Mary is adjusting her ideas," he continued, "let us return to Mr. Bingley."
"I am sick of Mr. Bingley," cried his wife.
"I'm sorry to hear that, but why did you not tell me so before? If I had known such a thing this morning, I certainly would not have called on him. It is very unlucky, but as I have actually paid the visit, we cannot escape the acquaintance now." The astonishment of the ladies was just what he wished, that of Mrs. Bennet perhaps surpassing the rest, though when the first tumult of joy was over, she began to declare that it was what she expected all the while.
"How good it was in you, my dear Mr. Bennet! But I knew I should persuade you at last.
I was sure you loved your girls too well to neglect such an acquaintance. Well, how pleased I am! And it is such a good joke, too, that you should have gone this morning and never said a word about it until now.
Now, Kitty, you may cough as much as you choose, said Mr. Bennet, and, as he spoke, he left the room, fatigued with the raptures of his wife.
What an excellent father you have, girls, said she when the door was shut. I do not know how you will ever make him amends for his kindness, or me either, for that matter.
At our time of life, it is not so pleasant, I can tell you, to be making new acquaintances every day. But for your sakes, we will do anything. Lydia, my love, though you are the youngest, I dare say Mr. Bingley will dance with you at the next ball.
Ugh, said Lydia stoutly, I am not afraid, for though I am the youngest, I am the tallest.
The rest of the evening was spent in conjecture how soon he would return Mr. Bennet's visit, and determining when they should ask him to dinner. Chapter 3. Not all that Mrs. Bennet, however, with the assistance of her five daughters, could ask on a subject was sufficient to draw from her husband any satisfactory description of Mr. Bingley. They attacked him in various ways, with barefaced questions, ingenious superstitions, and distant surmises, but he eluded the skill of them all. And when they were at last obliged to accept the second-hand intelligence of their neighbour Lady Lucas. Her report was highly favourable. Sir William had been delighted with him. He was quite young, wonderfully handsome, extremely agreeable, and to crown the whole, he meant to be at the next assembly with a large party. Nothing could be more delightful. To be fond of dancing was certainly a step towards falling in love, and very lively hopes of Mr. Bingley's heart were entertained. "If I can see but one of our daughters happily settled at Netherfields," said Mrs. Bennet to her husband, "and all the others equally well married, I shall have nothing to wish for." In a few days Mr. Bingley returned Mr. Bennet's visit, and sat about 10 minutes with him in his library. He had entertained hopes of being admitted to the sight of the young ladies, of whose beauty he had heard much, but he saw only the father. The ladies were somewhat more fortunate, for they had the advantage of ascertaining from an upper window that he wore a blue coat and rode a black horse. An invitation to dinner was soon afterwards dispatched, and already had Mrs. Bennet planned the courses that were to do credit to her housekeeping, when an answer arrived which deferred it all. Mr. Bingley was obliged to be in town the following day, and consequently unable to accept the honour of the invitation, etc., etc. Mrs. Bennet was quite disconcerted. She could not imagine what business he would have in town so soon after his arrival in Hertfordshire. She began to fear that he might be always flying about from one place to another, and never settled at Netherfield as he ought to be. Lady Lucas quieted her fears a little by starting the idea of his being gone to London to get a large party for the ball, and a report soon followed that Mr. Bingley was to bring 12 ladies and 7 gentlemen with him to the assembly. The girls grieved over such a number of ladies, but were comforted the day before the ball by hearing that instead of 12 he had brought only 6 with him from London, his 5 sisters, and a cousin. And when the party entered the assembly room, it consisted only of 5 altogether: Mr. Bingley, his 2 sisters, the husband of the eldest, and another young man. Mr. Bingley was good-looking and gentlemanlike. He had a pleasant countenance and easy, unaffected manners. His sisters were fine women with an air of decided fashion. His brother-in-law, Mr. Hurst, merely looked the gentleman, but his friend Mr. Darcy soon drew the attention of the room with his fine tall person, handsome features, noble mien, and the report which was in general circulation within 5 minutes after his entrance, of his having 10,000 a year. The gentleman pronounced him to be a fine figure of a man, the ladies declared that he was much handsomer than Mr. Bingley, and he was looked at with great admiration for about half the evening, till his manners gave a disgust which turned the tide of his popularity, for he was discovered to be proud, to be above his company, and above being pleased, and not all his large estate in Derbyshire could then save him from having a most forbidding, disagreeable countenance, and being unworthy to be compared with his friend. Mr. Bingley had soon made himself acquainted with all the principal people in the room. He was lively and unreserved, danced every dance, was angry that the ball closed so early, and talked of giving one himself at Netherfield. Such amiable qualities must speak for themselves. What a contrast between him and his friend! Mr. Darcy danced only once with Mrs. Hurst, and once with Miss Bingley, declined being introduced to any other lady, and spent the rest of the evening in walking around the room, speaking occasionally to one of his own party. His character was decided. He was the proudest, most disagreeable man in the world, and everybody hoped that he would never come here again. Amongst the most violent against this was Mrs. Bennet, whose dislike for his general behavior was sharpened into particular resentment by his having slighted one of her daughters. Elizabeth Bennet had been obliged by the scarcity of gentlemen to sit down for two dances, and during part of that time Mr. Darcy had been standing near enough for her to overhear a conversation between him and Mr. Bingley, who came from the dance for a few minutes to press his friend to join.
"Come, Darcy," said he, "I must have you dance. I hate to see you standing about yourself in this stupid manner. You had much better dance."
"I certainly shall not. You know how I detest it, unless I am particularly acquainted with my partner. At such an assembly as this, it would be insupportable. Your sisters are engaged, and there is no other woman in the room whom it would not be a punishment for me to stand up with."
"I would not be so fastidious as you are," cried Bingley. "For a kingdom, upon my honour, I have never met with so many pleasant girls in my life as I have this evening, and there are several of them, you see, uncommonly pretty."
"You are dancing with the most handsome girl in the room," said Mr. Darcy, looking at the eldest Miss Bennet.
"Oh, she is the most beautiful creature I ever beheld, but there is one of her sisters sitting down right behind you, who is very pretty, and I dare say very agreeable. Do let me ask my partner to introduce you."
"Which do you mean?" And turning round, he looked for a moment at Elizabeth till catching her eye. He withdrew his own and coldly said, "She's tolerable, but not handsome enough to tempt me, and I am in no humour at present to give consequence to ladies who are slighted by other men. You had better return to your partner and enjoy her smiles, for you are wasting your time with me." Mr. Bingley followed his advice. Mr. Darcy walked off, and Elizabeth remained with no very cordial feelings towards him. She told the story, however, with great spirit amongst her friends, for she had a lively, playful disposition, which delighted in anything ridiculous. The evening altogether passed off pleasantly to the whole family. Mrs. Bennet had seen her eldest daughter much admired by the Netherfield party. Mr. Bingley had danced with her twice, and she had been distinguished by his sisters. Jane was as much gratified by this as her mother could be, though in a quieter way. Elizabeth felt Jane's pleasure. Mary had heard herself mentioned to Miss Bingley as the most accomplished girl in the neighbourhood, and Catherine and Lydia had been fortunate enough to never be without partners, which was all that they yet had learned to care for at a ball. They returned, therefore, in good spirits to Longbourn, the village where they lived, and of which they were the principal inhabitants. They found Mr. Bennet still up. With a book he was regardless of time, and on the present occasion he had a good deal of curiosity as to the event of an evening which had raised such splendid expectation. He had rather hoped that all his wife's views on the stranger would be disappointed, but he soon found that he had a very different story to hear.
"Oh, my dear Mr. Bennet," as she entered the room, "we have had the most delightful evening, a most excellent ball. I wish you had been there. Jane was so admired, nothing could be like it. Everybody said how well she looked, and Mr. Bingley thought her quite beautiful and danced with her twice." "Only think of that, my dear. He actually danced with her twice, and she was the only creature in the room that he asked a second time. First of all, he asked Miss Lucas. I was so vexed to see him stand up with her. But, however, he did not admire her at all. Indeed, nobody can, you know. And he seemed quite struck with Jane as she was going down to dance. So he inquired who she was, and got introduced, and asked her for the two next. Then the two third he danced with Miss King, and the two fourth with Maria Lucas, and the two fifth with Jane again, and the two sixth with Lizzie, and the Boulanger—" "If he had any compassion for me," cried her husband impatiently, "he would not have danced half as much. For God's sake, say no more of his partners. Oh, that he had sprained his ankle at the first dance!" "Oh, my dear," continued Mrs. Bennet, "I'm quite delighted with him. He is so excessively handsome, and his sisters are charming women. I never in my life saw anything more elegant than their dresses. I dare say the lace upon Mrs. Hurst's gown—" Here she was interrupted again. Mr. Bennet protested against any description of finery. She was therefore obliged to seek another branch of the subject, and related, with much bitterness of spirit and some exaggeration, the shocking rudeness of Mr. Darcy. "But I can assure you," she added, "that Lizzie does not lose much by not suiting his fancy, for he is a most disagreeable, horrid man, not at all worth pleasing. so high and so conceited, that there is no enduring him. He walked there, and then he walked here, fancying himself so very great, not handsome enough to dance with. I wish you had been there, my dear, to have given him one of your set-downs. I quite detest the man."